Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Divination. Divination is a podcast and video show by Elegant Themes, the creators of Divi, the ultimate WordPress theme and visual page builder. The goal of Divination is really simple. We want to provide you with the knowledge, insights, and supportive community that you need to be successful with WordPress and Divi. I'm your host, Nathan B. Weller, and as your host, it's my job to facilitate that success by having various guests from the Divi and wider WordPress community onto the show to share their stories and experiences with you. In this episode, I interview Monica Higgins of Green Peas for Breakfast, a design studio based out of Sydney, Australia. Monica is an active Divi community member and a designer whose unique visual style works equally well across both print and digital projects, including, of course, Divi websites. The primary focus of our conversation was identifying the steps that she took to develop her unique visual design style and then build a business that allows her to exercise that style in creative and challenging ways on a regular basis, something that I think a lot of people in the community would like to emulate. So all of that and a lot more in today's episode of Divination. Here it is. Monica, welcome to Divination.
Hey, Nathan. Thanks.
It's good to have you. We were just joking beforehand. I'll clue everybody in. We did our pre-interview for this about a year ago. And since then, every time we've checked in with each other, hey, you still want to do that? Oh, yeah, I totally want to do that. And then scheduling doesn't happen or doesn't work out. Or we'll put it off. We'll catch back up with you or we'll follow up on this later. And it is happening. It's been a long time coming. Welcome
Finally
to the show.
Here is the moment. Thank you.
So where are you joining us from? If you would, please, you know, for those who don't know you, introduce yourself and your company and tell us where you're based out of.
Well, my name is Monica Higgins and my business is called Green Peas for Breakfast, which is a small design studio existing of me. And I do web design, illustration, print design, and that sort of thing. And I'm from Sydney, Australia.
Nice. Yeah, you're one of the few people in the community that I've come across anyway who's still doing a lot of print and just sort of raw design work that's not necessarily associated with the web. What's your split on that, do you think? Are you mostly web design with like a few print projects here and there, or do you still do a lot of just design work?
Yeah, I would say it's 50-50.
Oh, wow.
I do a lot of print, I guess, for wine companies. I do a lot of work for musicians, so a lot of album covers, gig posters.
Very cool.
Theater stuff, all sorts. So, yeah, and I love print as well. I love web. I love print.
Well, I mean, so many people fall in love with design through music or through their love of music. Was that where you got involved, or did you, because you said you do print for a lot of different things, not just music, but was that a birth of your design or at least your business?
I wouldn't say it was exactly the birth of my business, but when I started, it was something that I did a lot because I guess there are a lot of musicians out there who needed, you know, work done, and I wanted to build my portfolio. So I did a lot for musicians who maybe couldn't afford, you know,
the classic,
a very established designer.
Yeah. The classic getting started routine. So we'll jump into your story of how you got started in design and WordPress and all that. But, before we do that, I'm always curious to find out, you know, particularly in your case, since you're not, you're about 50-50 with different types of design, what's a typical day like for Green Peas for Breakfast?
Well, it does vary a lot, but I usually get up at about 5:30 in the morning.
Which this is 6 a.m. your time, just so everybody knows.
Yes.
She's an early bird for sure.
I really am. I like the mornings. I feel much more, inspired, and I'm able to just truck along and power through stuff in the mornings. So, I get up then, and I'm at home at the moment because it's kind of bucketing down and thundery here today, but I normally go to my studio in another part of Sydney. Mm. Then I'm just working on projects all day. I like to get my big projects out in the mornings, mm-hmm. and then I spend the afternoon doing kind of boring things like admin, which I'm not actually very good at. So I do those when I'm a bit tired at about 3 o'clock.
Yeah. Everybody has their kind of way that they like to approach splitting up their day, but it seems like for a lot of people, particularly those who just really got into this because they have a huge passion for the creative design work, there's always that dreaded block. Maybe dread is too harsh of a word, but there's always that block of time where like, okay, time to make the business work instead of do the work that I love.
Yes. Yeah, totally. But you know what? At the end of the day, when I actually do it, there's a certain catharsis to it, and it's kind of relaxing.
Yeah, well, I find that with anything that's repetitive in my own workflow, like anything that I can, if I can establish a really solid routine, and the routine is something that I can go back to day in, day out. What I like about that is even if it's a task I don't particularly like, there's comfort in the routine. And so like you have your exertion with like your big problem solving chunks of your day and your design or creation work. And then, you know, even if it's not work that you enjoy, just settling back into that routine of, okay, this is the time that I do that thing. It can be nice. Like you said, it can be cathartic.
Yeah. And there's a sense of achievement in it too, you know?
Yeah. Well, that was my next thing is, you know, when you get nothing quite like, you know, like sending out the invoice and being like, okay, yeah, that's nice. Count my money or whatever.
I know, it's great. I actually did that yesterday evening. I sent out heaps and heaps of invoices and it felt so good because I know that, yes, there's all that money coming in.
Yes. So we're going to talk later about the kind of topic that we decided to focus on for this episode is like establishing or developing like a visual style. And it's something I think your designs and your company is really known for. But I'm sure there's a long journey before that. And so maybe we can start before we get to that topic in particular with just learning about how you got into design and WordPress and web design, all of that in general, and then talk about how that transitioned into Divi. Can you tell us a bit about kind of your beginnings as an artist?
Yeah. Do you want the long story or the short story?
What would fit into about 10 minutes?
Okay.
With some questions.
Well, basically I'm self-taught, so okay. I don't have any sort of qualifications in design or, you know, web design or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I started out, you know, at university, I began to study to be a history, English and drama teacher in high school. And then I changed my mind and decided I wanted to be a primary or elementary school teacher. And then I discovered writing, and decided that I wanted to be a journalist. So long story short, I was at uni for about 6 or 7 years until I finally figured out what I wanted to do.
A couple different majors, and it sounds like.
Yes. Three majors.
Nothing wrong with that.
And then I worked for many years as a journalist, actually, before I came to design. I was an arts journalist and travel writer, but mostly a film critic. And what happened was I was interviewing lots of film directors and actors and stuff like that, and, you know, talking to them about their passions and about their creations and about their craft. It sort of made me realize that I wasn't actually doing I was writing about other people's creations when I wanted to be creating myself. Mm-hmm. And there was always this, I always had this interest in art, and I did it all through school, and I always drew. So I kind of just decided that that's what I wanted to do. So I got a job at the University of Sydney, and I kind of lied a little bit and said that I was, you know, a designer. So I did that, and worked in design, in the marketing department at Sydney Uni, doing graphic design. And then I just thought, well, you know, I'm sick of just designing this one look all the time. And I decided to start my own business. So I quit my job. It was a big risk.
Now, did you have clients before you quit, or did you just decide that you're doing it and can stay in your current job a second longer?
Yeah, exactly. That I had no clients, except I had a couple of musician sort of people who wanted work. But I was very lucky in that a colleague at Sydney Uni had a client, a different sort of educational tertiary institution down the road, who needed a designer. So they hooked me up with those guys, and they're still my clients today. I do work for them every single week. I had no clients, and I haven't actually had to find any clients. They've just come to me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been interesting, and it's been 6 years now. So yeah, it's been an interesting journey.
Yeah. So I'm imagining, maybe I'm wrong, that at the beginning there, you're doing a lot more print than web design, or is that not true?
No, it's always been about 50-50.
Okay.
Usually when I get jobs, there's print and web elements to each job.
Oh, cool.
So if it's a musician, it'll be a website, gig posters, album art. Branding, it's usually, you know, the website, logo design. Depending on the company, it might be wine labels, it might be, you know, business cards, menus, packaging, all sorts of different things. So yeah, most jobs have a bit of both in them.
Oh, that's awesome. So I guess what I'm getting at is, when did WordPress for you enter into the equation?
That was your next question. I forgot to answer. Sorry. So basically I was designing stuff in HTML and CSS, mm-hmm. and someone said to me, oh, I want to be able to update it myself. And I freaked out, and I'm like, oh my God, I don't know how to do this. what am I going to do? And I ended up hiring a developer, and they, you know, took my PSD and made it into a WordPress site, which was great. But then I started looking into WordPress, and I hadn't really heard about it at the time, or much about it. I tried to make my own WordPress themes and got very confused. I'm not a coder, you know, at the end of the day. I don't really know much about PHP and all of the other scripts that are involved in actually making a theme. But then I just randomly was Googling WordPress themes and came across Elegant Themes, and I saw all of their themes. This was pre-Divi.
Sure.
And I thought, wow, I've hit this gold mine. There are all of these themes, and I, you know, learned about child themes, and then Divi came along, and I really, that's the only one I work with now. I don't actually, if anyone comes to me with other themes they want to use, I try and steer them towards Divi.
Well, yeah. So I mean, like before Divi, it seems like what people like, particularly people like yourself who had CSS and HTML knowledge and were doing kind of static sites, they really liked the ability to go, oh, well, there's basically like 80 pre-designed templates for me to start with, and then I can, you know, create my child theme, customize it, and get a unique look. And then now with Divi, people kind of are like, well, I have unlimited templates here if I can just come up with them, you know, and build them and save them to the library. So that seems to be kind of how people operate. Does the library play a big part in your process, or do you kind of come to each project as its own thing that you develop kind of from the ground up, as far as the way that the site, the templates look and stuff like that, or the pages look?
I think there are, I do have a few sort of favorite layouts that I do kind of rehash depending on the job, but I try to make look quite different for each job.
Sure.
But most of the time, no, I develop something completely new each time. I really love exploring something different with each job.
Yeah.
Otherwise I get a bit bored. So it's probably not the best approach, because I guess I could work a lot faster if I've got a huge library of Divi layouts that I can draw on. But
I think there's a give and take. I mean, some people, that's their business model, is to have a huge Divi library, which they, you know, shamelessly, and it should be shamelessly, it's what it's for, just reuse every single time. They're like, this is basically your site. We're going to change the colors. We're going to tweak the layout, but we're not really going to change it. And that's it. And we're going to do high volume. We've talked to several people on the show who have done that, but it seems like for yourself and for people who are kind of in the same vein as you, you have a very unique visual style, and you incorporate that into something very different and unique with each client. You know, I saw a few of your sites now that have been posted up to the Facebook groups and stuff, and the latest one was really impressive, and it kind of made me wonder, you know, how you approach developing your own visual style, how you establish like the graphics and the visual elements that you use. For those who don't really know what I'm talking about, what I guess what I'm getting at is everybody's familiar with the functionality of Divi and the freedom it gives you to create within the functions that Divi does. But sometimes what makes a website super unique and kind of have a visual signature are the visual elements that you bring into it from outside it. And I think that's something that you do quite well, Monica, and I would love to talk more about that.
Well, first of all, I think my visual, I've stuck with one visual style throughout my time, which is quite a decorative look, despite, I guess, trends or, you know,
like minimalism
shifts.
Or flat, you know.
Yeah. And I mean, with that said, I'm actually, I as new trends come up, I try and bring my work into it. So sure. If it's minimalism, I still have that decorative look, but I try to, you know, bring some cleanness to what I'm doing. But in terms of each individual client, I think the clients that come to me want a site that is quite active or slightly different from everyone else.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've already got that on board, which is great. So, you know, depending on the client, I just research a bit about them first and, you know, ask them lots of questions about how they want to appear in the online world. And to be honest, they usually just say, go for it, you know, do whatever you want.
So it sounds like a lot of people are coming to you with a familiarity of your work and your style to begin with. And they're saying, we want that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, definitely. And I've done quite a bit of work in attracting those sorts of clients. Yeah, so, I don't have to deal with people saying, oh God, that's so weird. You know, why did you make that for me?
Yeah.
So most of the time I just go for it.
Well, maybe you could tell us, I mean, for instance, I'm looking at your homepage right now and you've got this awesome, background with like subtle parallax of these elements of green peas. How do you approach creating, you know, what's your process for creating a graphic like this and then putting it into a website? I mean, obviously we've done tutorials on the blog about how to do like multi-layered parallax. And so I know how it's possible, but, you know, is this all illustration? Are you taking elements and creating collages, or, you know, how did this sort of signature style evolve over time into the process you use now when you're creating your elements?
Yes, well, that is digital collage, and that is something that I've actually been quite interested in for many years. It started in print. I started doing gig posters, and it was actually born of not having much time to illustrate. So I would sort of go and find, often botanical elements and cut them out in Photoshop and put them together to create a new look. So I started to do that on web as well. And once, Divi came out and there was parallax, I really started to enjoy creating these sites that have interesting depths and, slightly illusionary, and particularly on home pages, that's my favorite area of a website to work on is landing splashes.
Oh yeah.
There's another one that I've done, which is not digital collage. They're a band in Sydney called Funk Engine.
I
created this. Yeah, you might have. I created a landing splash, which, you know, has this car that's got crazy 70s psychedelic stuff coming out of its engine, and that sort of drives in, and then there's clouds moving, there's a city in the background, and it doesn't actually serve any purpose, but I think for musicians and people who are not necessarily trying to sell a service, this is sort of stuff that I really love doing because it's really visual, it really kind of speaks about their personality.
Actually kind of an interesting topic just to kind of, I guess, tangent on real quick is, I find some of the most satisfying projects are when you're working with other like creatives, or you're working on the behalf of creatives, like people who get what you're trying to do, where you're trying to go, and you really have some freedom to be maybe a little bit experimental. And that's kind of like what your brand has become. Have you found it hard? Because I found it hard in the past when I was freelancing to find people in that vein who can still pay the bills. Because a lot of times, like, you know, the people who are not, you know, super far on the creative spectrum, you know, they've got their ducks in a row, their business is humming along, and they're happy to pay the bills, but they kind of are more straight-laced about it. So is there a balance there? Have you found that, or has that not been your experience?
No, it has been my experience. Early on, I sort of found, you know, overall my business wasn't making much money because I was working with a lot of clients who, you know, wanted really creative stuff, but obviously couldn't afford to pay much. But I wanted to do it because that's what I love doing. And I actually went to see a business coach about it to sort of learn how to attract better paying clients who still enable me to do what I love doing. So
can you share kind of what the insights were? Like what kind of stuff did they tell you? Because I think that's a problem that a lot of people run into.
Yeah, it's for me, it was really just about honing in on who those people were. I mean, I think a lot of people would have heard about client avatars. For those who don't, they're little profiles that you write up about your ideal clients. You do a lot of research into, you know, what makes those clients tick, what their interests are. When I was going through the process, it all seemed a bit silly to me. I thought, oh, this is just kind of a bit weird. And
Do you feel like you're kind of making up an imaginary person? You're like, I don't even know if this persona or this avatar exists, but this is what I would need. But once you know what you need, you can spot it. You know, like it's kind of a chicken and the egg situation is like, you know, if you can identify what you really need, you start to see it when you're looking for it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it just started to flow from there. And also, I guess the other thing that came out of that was just not being scared to quote more. So now even with musicians, a lot of musicians don't necessarily have that much money. I just say, well, this is what I charge. And if you don't like it, I'm really sorry, but I can't help you. And a lot of them are actually really receptive to just paying what I quote.
I think for some people, for the right client, like you're saying, like that you found, is they'll find a way to get that, I guess, right?
Yeah, to come that's up with right.
it if they want, if they really want it.
Very and I offer payment plans too. So.
Oh, that's nice. How does that work?
So they can either pay a deposit and then just pay it off over a period of a couple of months, or. You know, just different options, credit card payments, you know, that sort of thing, just so that it's split. And that helps with cash flow as well anyway.
Okay, cool. That was a fun tangent. So I do want to go back to the visual style, though, because I think that's something that I feel like your work has a lot of. And I want to... I don't know. It always seems like such a mystery. Even as you're talking about it, it's kind of a hard thing to pin down. Like what makes, what does it mean to come up with your own visual style? How do you approach it? How do you develop it? So maybe you can just, if we revisit that for a second, like tell us about how, maybe it's just your art in general progress from the beginning to digital, to how you've adapted like your print work to digital design for websites. I don't know. I would love to be able to give some more insights on people who are like, I want a unique signature. What do I do? If you can speak to that a little bit more.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, I think it just naturally evolves over time. Well, it has for me anyway. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, and even still now, you know, I'm a member on lots of, you know, design kind of social networks like Dribbble. I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess a few people out there will know what Dribbble is. And, you know, you see all of this amazing design work out there and you get really inspired by what they're doing. And, you know, I say to myself, oh, I want to be able to do that. And so I just start trying. And, you know, earlier on, it would be about mimicking other people's styles.
I was going to ask that. Yeah, I just read this awesome article, and if you haven't read it, you probably agree with it, but if other people haven't who are listening in or watching, Smashing Magazine published a great article on copy work not too long ago, if you want to check it out. It's the whole concept, which is what you're talking about, is just find people who you think they're doing rad stuff and just see if you can pull it off. Like, how close can you get to doing that thing that you really love? Like, don't do it for a client. Don't do it for it. Just do it and see if you can pull it off. So was that a big part of your process then?
Yes, definitely. Huge part of my process. I mean, you know, I've been designing and illustrating for, you know, probably 20 years now. Mm. When I first started, I had a boyfriend who was he was a graphic designer and artist. So he really introduced me to the web. You know, he helped me build my first HTML blog in about 2001.
Nice.
At that stage, I was very influenced by his style. So all of my work, you know, I didn't copy as such, but, you know, I did a little bit, but then it grew from there. And then I guess, you know, in more recent years, yeah, just being, you know, Pinterest and stuff like that, I still find even now that other people's styles inspire me and I say, oh, I want to do something like that, but then I just bring my own voice into it as well. Mm-hmm. So it's about creating something new. But I really, if anyone is, you know, starting out in this area, I do highly recommend that idea of copying other people's work.
It sounds like, I didn't want to lead the conversation too much, but I've asked this question of a lot of people over the years. It's been just a general fascination of mine. I remember back, you know, all the way back in 2008 when I first started blogging here and there, and then in 2010 got really serious about it. It was all for design blogs, and I was interviewing artists and designers and talking about their creative process, more or less. And this equation more or less came up all the time, which was get inspired, copy others, and let your style emerge. Like, it was that progression seemed to be the case. And it's really cool to hear. I mean, I did interject there for a second, but it was cool to hear that that's basically what you're talking about too. So it seems like a fairly reliable formula if anybody's interested in duplicating that process.
Yeah.
I guess the key ingredient is time, because it's not going to come together, you know, in an afternoon or anything.
No, not at all. It does. It takes many years. And, you know, for example, I've only just mastered Illustrator. I mean, it took me so many years to really understand it. Now I use it all the time, particularly for making icons for websites. You know, and that sort of thing. But it all takes a very long time, but it's a great process. And I think that, you know, you just have to believe in yourself and know that you'll get there in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one quick question I just thought of, based on the design I saw, recently that you published one of the Facebook groups, for the restaurant there in Sydney.
Yes.
And it's one of your newer ones. You had some really awesome elements kind of scattered throughout. Some of the stuff stayed the same on each page and some of it was unique to each page. Do you have a sort of, you know, checklist of elements that you would create for almost every website, or is it unique for every website? Like, I'm always going to have a certain number of background this or sidebar this, or, you know, icons for these elements, or is it whatever the project might require uniquely?
It's, yeah, the latter. Everything is totally, depending on the site. And it does, the way I build sites often is quite organic, which is, again, I don't know if that's the best way, but that's the way I do it.
Yeah.
Where I actually really enjoy, and that's why I like Divi, because you can play around with it. Yeah.
I do the same thing. I'm not the, like, approach it and have like a set process for every single design I do. I actually will do, I'll just start building a page and it'll, by the time I'm done, I may have built that page like four different times and it's, you know, before I get to an end result.
Exactly. And that's what I do too. These days I don't even really design in Photoshop for sites. I just get straight into Divi and I just play around with things. I like the accidents that happen. Sometimes, you know, you might, you know, because I use a lot of, I make child themes for every site. So I'm playing around with codes and, you know, sometimes things just appear and I say, wow, that actually looks pretty damn good. And that's actually what happened with that website, Poplar.
Oh, nice.
It wasn't actually meant to look like that, but it ended up being that way. And I was happy with it. So yeah, it's a very, very interesting organic process for me.
Do you ever have these design moments where you've been tinkering with the website and then you make one change that you really like, but then you realize if you want to have that change there, you've got to change it, you know, across elements across the whole website. And then you make that change and you're like, well, I like that part of it, but now all these pages, there's like a trickle down of like changes that have to be made. And then by the time you're done updating everything to fit that one little initial change, you've got a totally different website.
Yes.
Because that happens to me all the time.
Yes, totally. Well, that's actually what happened with this Poplar website, because I hadn't seen the interior of their restaurant. And when it was finally finished, it was very black and white and it was very abstract. It looked really cool, but it was quite different to the website that I'd built, which they'd requested. They wanted botanicals and all of this sort of thing. So I thought, wow, I feel like this really needs to match somehow. So I brought in some of these abstract black and white backgrounds, and then I thought, oh, well, if I've got that down there, I have to put it up there as well, otherwise it doesn't match. And then I thought, well, I have to put it on every page. So I had to change the whole thing. But I think that's important to, you know, make sure that branding is seamless across, you know, print and web too. So, yeah.
Oh, that's actually something I didn't think about is, like, do you tend to finish the website or the print material first? Because if they have to be consistent, it seems like the more fluid one would probably be the web design.
I normally do the print first. So what I do is I design, like I said earlier, you know, there are, for most of my jobs, there are several elements of print and web. So what I would normally do is design the logo and a couple of print applications of that logo and then draw from that to build the website.
Very cool.
Rather than good, the other way
like
around.
As a starting point and then take that into that. Gotcha.
Yes.
So what do you do if you're working on your website and the kind of organic flow leads you in a different direction than the print? Do you have to then go back and redo the print, or do you just find a happy medium somehow?
I try to find a happy medium. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm known to tinker on websites for far too long over and above the scope of the quote that I've given them. So I have to rein that in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can imagine there's like, as I'm sure you know, because you started with writing, there's like different styles of writing. There's like the outline approach. And then there's like, I don't know if you know it as this, but I've always heard it as the gardening approach. Like you start writing and then you just kind of see how things grow and you trim it here or you encourage it here or whatever, but it's a very organic process. And that would be how I would describe my web design. It sounds like that's kind of what you're talking about as well. How do you manage your timelines when that's the case? You know, you were just mentioning this, but does it become a problem, or do you just go, okay, I just got to cut it off, or what do you do?
Yeah, it has been a problem in the past because I guess, in terms of running my business, everything's a big learning curve, having no training in running a business. So that's something that has come up. I treat designing websites like I would be creating an artwork or an illustration. So, you know, putting a lot of heart and soul and love into it. But, you know, the reality of that is, you know, you have to pay rent, you've got to run your business, you've got bills. So what I do now is I time myself. So I get a really clear picture of how long something is actually taking versus
how long you think it should have. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And I now just try to say, you know, good enough is good enough in most cases. And everything doesn't have to be pixel perfect. because most clients are really happy with, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And I think your work really speaks to the fact that you found a way to make, you know, to make this process, this organic design process work, and a way to apply your visual style in a successful way. So real quick, I would love to kind of leave our crowd with a closing thought. So just to recap, if there's someone who wants to more or less emulate what you've done and being able to find clients who allow them to have more creative freedom and develop and apply their own unique visual style, do you have any kind of, if they don't take anything else from this episode away, like what are the things that you would want them to remember and apply?
I think once you've comfortable with your style, just stay true to that, because that's what will attract the right clients in the end. Even if you're not going out and physically searching for them, if you've just got your portfolio up, you're using Instagram or whatever, people will find you that way as long as you're really true to what you're doing and you're honing it and being passionate about it. They'll find you.
That's awesome. That's all. That makes a lot of sense. Like the choice of doubling down consistently and refining your style instead of making concessions that kind of dilute your uniqueness, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I mean, I guess just saying no to learning to say no when the client isn't right. If it doesn't sit right with you, if you have a gut feeling that it's not going to work out, they're not really going to love what you're doing, just say no.
Yeah.
And something better will come along.
Perfect. Well, Monica, that sounds like great advice. It's worked for you, clearly. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your experiences with us.
Thank you for having me, Nathan. It was nice to chat to you.
Well, that's all for this episode of Divination. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. I want to give another big thank you to our guest, Monica Higgins, for coming on the show. If you have any questions about what we discussed in today's episode, please feel free to leave them on the Elegant Themes blog, and we'll be sure to respond. Thanks again for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you all around the community. And as always, we'll be back here next week with another episode of Divination.